Iowa everywhere.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Sage Rosenfels here with the Iowa Everywhere Network. This is the Sage Rosenfels Experience. Today, I have a great host on, a very timely host, with the Miami Heat deep in the playoffs and Jimmy Butler playing great. I have an Ethan Skolnick. Ethan is a longtime sports reporter in South Florida, from Palm Beach, Fort Lauderdale, all the way down to Miami. He now has his own network, the Five Reasons Network, and he's the CEO. They cover all things Miami sports. And he's a great host. We deep dove into Jimmy Butler, who he is and where he came from, where the Miami Heat are in the playoffs, and as well as some great LeBron stories and a great Nick Saban story at the very end. Have a listen.
From the Channel Seat Studios. Channel Seat Studios. This is the Sage Rosenfels Experience, exclusively on Iowa Everywhere.
Channel Seed, seedsmanship at work.
Everybody, Sage Rosenfels here. Sage Rosenfels Experience on the Iowa Everywhere Network. With the NBA playoffs going on, and Iowa is not the sort of NBA state, but there are a lot of NBA fans in Iowa, Brent Bloom being number one fan. I have on today a special guest. When I played for the Miami Dolphins 2006, 7, and 8, we had many beat reporters, some at Palm Beach, some in Fort Lauderdale, and obviously the Miami Herald. And my guest today, I believe, worked for all three.
Yes.
But he is sort of everything South Florida. He's worked for the Heat mostly, it sounds like, or followed the Heat, I should say, in various ways over the last 10, 15 years after he sort of left the more of the football aspect of South Florida sports. And here we are. The Heat are up 1-0 in the playoffs. And he also covered LeBron James for a number of years during his run with the Miami Heat. So lots to talk about today. Ethan Skolnick is my guest on today. Ethan Skolnick, welcome to the show.
It's good to be with you. I did cover your career in with the Dolphins, as well as your t-shirt making skills. You did some of that, right? Did you make a t-shirt for Ricky, I believe?
If you want to tell the story, this is where we are. Go ahead. Go.
No, I mean, it was free Ricky, right? Was during that particular period of time when the NFL was not quite as loose about things as they are these days?
Yes, I don't remember the exact time. I can't believe I did that.
I can't believe you did a lot of things.
I can't believe I did that. Ricky, was this when he had gotten maybe his second?
Yeah.
But it was really more the fact that it seemed like the media, it was like all this judgment. And it was sort of like, leave this guy alone, let him figure it out. A lot of judgment was coming down on the man, Ricky. And so I thought I would do like what a good team it would do, is just make these. I don't know how I even went to a print shop or something, and I just printed free, like white t-shirts, black letters. Yeah. I wish I would have had. I hope someone
had. They weren't high quality shirts, I'll say that. But the message was important. That was the key thing here.
Yes, just free Ricky. Just let him go. Just let him run, you know? Just let him do his thing. Who's he bothering? Ricky Williams is bothering nobody, you know? So.
Well, he ran into a tent. He did run to a tent in Australia.
Yes, he lived in a tent for a short amount of time. So, yes, you covered us during that era. I'm not sure where we should start, but why don't you give us your sort of credentials as we walk into this quick NBA conversation?
Well, you're right. I did work in mainstream sports media for a while, such as that existed. So I took the more traditional path of learning to cover teams. And I was actually covering the Dolphins when I was 23.
Before get my Miami time. Cup on today, by the way.
Look at that.
Stuff. Look at that. That was just random.
Well, good. It'll be underwater soon, so that's good. Fort Lauderdale's almost underwater. So, yeah, I went through more of the traditional path, working for newspapers, was a writer for years, as you mentioned. I was with the, I covered the Dolphins. I think during the time that you were there, I was actually a columnist probably at the Sentinel, I think.
I worked Fort Lauderdale Sun-Sentinel.
Yeah, I had worked at all three. So at that time, I was covering you guys and the Heat primarily. And then when LeBron came in 2010, I had a choice, continue to cover a franchise that changed coaches every 2 to 3 years and hadn't won a playoff game in forever, or go cover the biggest show on earth. So I went to go cover the biggest show on earth. So since then, I've been a little more Heat-centric, but now I run this Five Reasons Sports Network, so I'm out of mainstream media. I have about 40 contributors here, and it's a it's a new media enterprise, basically. So we have podcasts. I'm the host of the Five on the Floor Miami Heat podcast. We have the 3 Yards Per Carry Miami Dolphins podcast. Those are both the top downloaded podcasts in their spaces. And then we have a YouTube channel, about 25,000 subscribers, and we've got a website and also a big social media presence. So it's more of a new wave type thing. As newspapers have contracted, stopped spending resources, laying off people, local TV, a couple of the stations out here aren't even covering sports anymore. So what we provide is an opportunity for really talented young people who are content creators in South Florida sports to – sort of increase their reach. And, we're proud of a lot of things we've done. My number one Heat reporter is 19 years old. He came to me at a Heat game when he was 16 and a half, asked to start writing. Now he's asking Eric Spoelstra the first question at press conferences, and he's built a Twitter following from 50 to 25,000. So, he's taking online classes for Lauderdale. So, it's a different platform, but honestly, I'm my own boss now, and I prefer that to answering to somebody else. And we're covering all the South Florida sports, which means right now we're basically the next 2 weeks, we've got Heat playoff, Heat conference finals, Panthers conference finals, Heat conference finals, Panthers conference finals every other day here for the next couple of weeks. So it's been kind of a crazy time.
South Floridians do love their sports. They do. I think it gets an interesting rap because there's so many other things to do. Sometimes you see a lot of Dolphins games where there's not many people there. But when the teams are good, they really do, I feel like, support their teams in all of us. When I was there, the Marlins won the World Series, and it was like everyone was a Marlins fan, But it is an interesting place. It's a different place to sort of cover sports. It feels like, to me, you've moved up in the world. From the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel. It was sort of like Miami Herald, Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel felt a little bit less, at least this is as a player. And then there's like the Palm Beach Post who are like writing for the old people up there and who's like the young guy. But of course that ends up being like Jeff Darlington and Joe Shad. And
well, they all ended up in that at ESPN. Literally with the Palm Beach Post, I worked at the Palm Beach Post with Israel Goody. These are all like mentees that surpassed me. Israel Gutierrez, Todd Archer, Todd, Jeff Darlington, Joe Shad, Dan Graziano. They were all at the Palm Beach Post during periods of time where I was there, and all of them moved on basically to ESPN, NFL Network, etc. So when we had kind of like a, it was sort of like a Montreal Expos-like thing. Remember the way back in the day, the Expos had all these great players, but they were like a farm team for the Yankees, basically?
Yes, so I've thought about this before. I look at it as more of a shockwave effect. Mm-hmm. During the era you were there, you have your big markets, but Miami, with the Ricky Williams story, was such a wild situation. That and then Nick Saban coming in, I feel like that era, there was so much coverage in Miami. Day-to-day coverage, those writers, Alex Marvez, you're from right? Yep. They end up being sort of, people saw their work, and there's a group of talent, of course, but also like the light. You could have all that talent in Cleveland, and if no one, they're never in the news, who cares?
Right.
But there is like this.
That happened with the Big Three Heat, too, because it was once the Big Three Heat, like once we were, it was crazy every single day. And yes, a lot of locals ended up getting propel nationally in that regard. You mentioned Marvez. Not everybody ended up working for AEW. I will say that he ended up in the wrestling space as a ring. As
but that's actually what he wanted to do anyway. So yeah, Alex Marvez was another writer. Alex walked in. He wasn't wearing a Tommy Bahama shirt, but it was as if it was a Tommy Bahama shirt, but bought it at a much lower level store yes. with like definitely flip floppy sort of things, big baggy pants. But he had this like long, he has long curly hair up in like sort of man bun, but longer. I don't know. He was, and he talked about wrestling all the time.
It was a full mullet stage.
Full on mullet.
Yes,
it,
well, and he ended up working there, and yes, many stories with Alex on the road. Probably you weren't aware of these because you were actually on the field, but there's this one time he wasn't doing so good after a late night. I'll just say that I think we were in Denver, and he got taken out of the press box for his medical reasons, and on the way out he put his two fingers. He goes, "Send the notes." He had to send the. So at least the notes got sent in. It was probably who the inactives were that day or something along those lines, but he made sure that the notes got sent in. Yes.
Well, it was quite an era. Maybe if we have some time, we'll get to some Dolphin stories. If you can think of any, maybe any good Sage Rosenfeld stories for listeners, that'd be nice. That'd be nice. But we'll get to that later. Let's talk about the Miami Heat.
Yes.
Let's talk about what happened last night. I didn't watch the game. I saw Jimmy Butler hit this shot, but they were already up 7 with a minute and a half left. So, they're up 1-0. They're the 8th seed. Is that right? Were they the 8th seed this year? 7th or 8th seed and getting in. And they've had, of course, the big upset against the Bucks. And then now they are 1 up in the Eastern Conference Finals. Tell me about this team. Tell me about this team and its coach, Eric Spoelstra, who's this sort of Pat Riley disciple, and you guys have had nothing but stability down there for about 30 years.
Yeah, I mean that's where it starts from an organizational standpoint. I mean, we talk about the Dolphins, the Marlins, the Panthers. They've run through about 50 coaches between them or managers, while the Heat have had 3. Which some of it is chicken or the egg. Some of it is you have success, you don't have to replace guys. But other times it's you don't replace someone just because he has a down season. And so you look at what they've accomplished. It's pretty remarkable. I mean, honestly, this is his 7th conference finals since he took the job at age 37 in 2008. And as he said to me many times, he could have been fired a bunch of times and would have been in another organization. We just saw 5 high-profile NBA coaches lose their jobs in the past week. Mike Budenholzer, Monty Williams, Doc Rivers, etc. Nick Nurse. Me, all guys who won Coach of the Year. There are 6 Coach of the Year awards between those 4 guys. Eric's never won Coach of the Year. He's just made 7 conference finals. And a lot of it is that they've stuck with him through some things. As he's mentioned, he thought he might get fired when they brought in LeBron, because other organization might want a bigger name coach. When they started 9-8 that year and all the pressure was on them, and then when they lost in the finals in 2011 to Dallas, he thought all 3 of those times he could have been fired. Except 12 years later, he's still here. He's gotten much better at what he does. But this team is a weird team. I'll say this. This team was not fun to cover this year. They were not. You know when a team has a certain vibe that's a good vibe? This team did not have a good vibe. Like, they came off of an overachieving year last year where they were the number 1 seed. They lost to Boston in Eastern Conference Finals. The 3rd time in 4 years they faced Boston now in the Eastern Conference Finals. These have been the marquee organizations in the East for a bit of time now. And they lost because, Jimmy missed a 3 at the end of it. And then they get to the offseason and they didn't make any significant changes. All they did was lose PJ Tucker. They didn't want to spend the luxury tax. It felt like Heat players. I was in the Bahamas with them for training camp. It felt like there was frustration that the team wasn't upgraded when other teams in the East were. And, then there was also kind of a change in roles. Tyler Hero, who's out right now, which is an interesting story. But he was put in the starting lineup. And I think there was some consternation about that, not because people don't think Tyler's a good player, but because it just fit in the starting lineup when he had won 6th man of the year. So they really didn't play well this year. I mean, they were very frustrating. They actually had a negative net rating in the regular season. They only were above 500 because they won a ton of games in the clutch, which is playing out now, that they would kind of grind these teams down and then figure out a way to win some of them. But even with that, as you mentioned, they started the play-in as a 7 seed, lost the first play-in game at home to Atlanta, of all teams, and were down in the fourth quarter to Chicago in an elimination game before pulling that out. And since then, they've gone on a tear. It's a run that we didn't see coming, I guess, not because this team wasn't good the year before, but because they never showed really any life this year at all. They never had a 5-game winning streak the entire season. And now they've won 12 of their last 14 games that Jimmy Butler has played. So it's almost just like everything fell into place. They found their roles. Kyle Lowry got a little healthier. Kevin Love has been helpful. They brought him in on a buyout, and I didn't know how much he was going to contribute. Buyout guys typically don't, even if they've had Hall of Fame-type careers like Kevin has. But he's injected some fun and some life into the locker room, and he's been really good for them. And they're doing everything their coach wants them to do. If you look at all the numbers in the postseason, they're number one in loose balls gotten to. They're number one in charges taken.
Do you feel like this team is similar to – now, I played for the Giants in 2000, so 10-11 mm-hmm. training camp. They won 11. But 07, they mm-hmm. barely got into the playoffs.
Yes, yeah.
They were like 9-7, barely got in, like won the last game. Coughlin sort of saves his job. Mm-hmm. And then they go on a tear.
Yeah.
And they got all the fumbles. They made all right. the fourth and ones. Right. Like it's sort of a sports met or a simile there or something. It's very similar. Sort of you got hot right at the very very end. Like you.
I think there's appreciation and an exhale to a certain degree. Okay, we got in. All right, now everything resets. Right. So, you know, and I think that can happen in pretty much any sport. I mean, the reality is the same damn thing's happening in the same town here with the Florida Panthers. They finished last year, like the Heat, they were a 1 seed. Mm-hmm. They lost last year in the second round. They had a very choppy season this year with new pieces, and they clinched a playoff spot in the second to last game of the season.
Sometimes I feel like, though, this – a team makes a run like this, but mm-hmm. at the end of the day, they get to either the Eastern Conference Finals or, you know, the NFC Championship or mm-hmm. even the Super Bowl, but they just are like worn out.
Right.
From like, it's almost like you get on this high and there's just not enough that and probably talent being that you're like the 8 mm-hmm. seed to actually finish it off. But if they do, it's probably one of the more unique runs of, you know, if you can just get your foot in the door.
Right.
You know, you've got a chance. Right. And well, you look at that mentality.
There's only one team, 1 8 seed that's ever made the finals. And that was the 99 Knicks. And they actually beat the Heat in the first round. But there were a weird anomaly because that was the lockout season. So the season was only 50 games. So they finished only 6 games behind the Heat, but they were the 8 seed as opposed to the 1 seed. Only 6 games separated the first and the 8 seed. And they'd had injuries the whole year, and so they were not a normal 8 seed. Like, you got into the playoffs, you're like, well, you got to deal with Sprewell and Allen Houston now? Like, okay. And in a lot of ways, the Heat were not a normal 8 seed because they have a guy in Jimmy who took them to the finals 3 years ago. Bam is still there. And so I guess, I don't know if it's surprising because the roster and Spoelstra and Jimmy, but I think it's surprising because we just – didn't see this kind of spirit from this team the whole year. Like, they are – like, they get a game to the clutch situation. We know they're winning. Like, even last night – somebody put that stat last night. I think it was on ESPN. They're 5-2 in the playoffs in games they trail by 10 points. Like, that's just normal.
So what does that say about Spoelstra?
Hold on.
But what's that say about the style of coaching of when at just the right moments – you get your guys to because they don't have a Steph Curry or a LeBron or mm-hmm. you know, one of these sort of marquee names. They have a bunch of good players, and Butler is just unbelievably. How does he get Butler to all of a sudden in the playoffs just turn it on? Like, he seems to bring out the best in people at the most important times. What's that say about Eric Spoelstra?
Well, I think you've hit on it. I think that Eric's great strength is maximizing individuals. And the reality is they haven't spent into the luxury tax, okay? Mickey Arison hasn't wanted to spend into that. Carnival stock has a lot to do with that. So, you know, basically.
Yeah, so the owner of, this is another thing, when you play for like an NFL teams or you know, NBA, you start these owners, like who are these people? Well, in the Miami Heat, it's the guy who owns Carnival Cruise Lines.
It's the Arison family. So yeah. they bought the team and he did, you know, one really smart thing, and it set them up for a long time, which was in 1995. He traded a first round pick for Pat Riley when Riley was unhappy because he didn't have full control with the Knicks. And mostly Mickey has stayed out of the way. And that has been his great strength. He stayed out of the way and let his Pat run the organization in all ways, business side, personnel side, etc. But he's also kind of stopped spending. And so what the Heat have had to do is they've pivoted towards, and it's mostly been Spoelstra's doing, they've pivoted towards this developmental culture. So it's essentially, you know, he changed his whole staff. They aligned with Sioux Falls, their affiliate on the total opposite side of the country. And they've developed undrafted guy after undrafted guy after undrafted guy. Now, sometimes they made the mistake of paying those guys after, like a Duncan Robinson, et cetera. And there's this crazy thing where they can't really trade any of them because everybody in the league knows that they're better in Miami than they are anywhere else. Any of these guys who's gone anywhere else has not achieved the same level of success they have under Spoelstra's staff and under the Heat. But while the Heat have them, whether it's a Max Strus or a Gabe Vincent or Caleb Martin, these are all former two-way players, literally two-way G League players that the Heat have as three of their core seven in their rotation. So he's maximized these guys, and then he's empowered Jimmy and Bam to kind of lead it. And then Lowry and Love, you know, for whatever flaws they may have at this stage of their career, they both won championships as being one of the top three players on their teams. And they've added that, and it's just become this really interesting mix in the playoffs. They're built for the playoffs, I think, and more so than the regular season. And I think that the other thing is, but what Spo does is he empowers them individually. And also, I think there's great trust in him now from a lot of these guys. And it is about adjustments. Like I'm watching him and Mazzulla last night, the new coach for the Celtics. And it's a total overmatch. And it's not Mazzulla's fault. It's literally his first playoff run with a team that has more talent, is expected to go to the finals at this stage with Milwaukee out. But really, he had no answers for anything Spoelstra was throwing out there. And then the next game, he'll have fewer answers. And Spoelstra's now done this to Budenholzer and to Thibodeau. So, I mean, when you're in seven conference finals, when you make it to, what is it? He made it to five NBA finals at this stage. You've kind of seen everything, right? Yeah. So there's not a lot that they're going to throw at him, and he knows his team. But the most important thing that Eric has done is Jimmy Butler is really hard to coach. Okay. And some of it's for the right reasons and some of it's for the wrong reasons. He's really hard to coach in part because Jimmy's just going to do what Jimmy wants to do. That's just the way he is. But his ultimate goal is he wants to effing win. Like, and I think that's again, Minnesota, Chicago, Philadelphia. If you look at all those situations where it fell apart, particularly Minnesota, but to a certain degree, Philadelphia, he was playing with guys that just honestly didn't have the same drives that he did. And we've seen it afterwards. Ben Simmons, Karl Anthony Towns. The reality is Jimmy was right about all of them. But he's really hard to play with, and he's really hard to coach because he's going to demand it from you, but at the same time, he's also going to do his own thing sometimes. Like he doesn't stay at the team hotel a lot of the time. Like they put up with certain things with Jimmy that they never put up with Bron. But they know when it matters, he'll be there.
And well, not only has Ben there, I mean,
and play with him.
But not only to be there, but what's this about Jimmy Butler in the playoffs? I mean, there's only been so many times where someone scored 50 points in a playoff game.
His clutch. Averages have all completely skyrocketed again, and we knew it would happen. I think some of it is his basketball IQ is underrated. And so when you give him, he's not quite LeBron, but he's the closest guy I've covered to LeBron in terms of that. And if you give him time to prepare for an opponent, he will find the weaknesses in that opponent. And playoff series allow you that. Hmm. Regular season does not. You're playing a different team every single night. It doesn't really mean that much. Jimmy only played 64 games this year, three quarters of the season. He will never play more than that again. He's just not – he's going to take games off. He's got a knee. He's got an ankle. He's got a desire issue in the regular season. It's not, he'll show up for these, okay? And I feel like the NBA is a sort of a larger conversation, but they're working on this, and the, you know, the new CBA tried to address some of this. I don't think it will effectively. Is the NBA has a problem that the star players know the regular season does not matter, and it's just, and that's an issue because they're going to sit out a quarter of the games to be ready for now. I mean, you look at it, we could be headed for a Heat Lakers finals potentially. Both those teams were play-in teams. Like, neither of those teams gave a damn about the regular season. That's great for parity and the ratings are up, but it's not great ultimately for your regular season product. It used to be,
mm-hmm. your thought was to get the number one seed so you had home court advantage. Right. That's why the Bulls, you know,
right.
went out and got 70 wins? 72 wins. That's where you thought it mattered, mm-hmm. right? It definitely, that's the thought in football too. It's not like, hey, not we, but you get the bye in football,
right?
Which is really nice, right? Imagine the NBA if they, hey, you got a bye if you're the first seed.
It would make a big difference.
It would make a difference. You get a series off, you know? I think that the playoffs are an interesting thing, and the way the NBA is, it's not as important to get the one seed because if we just get in, then we can sort of.
But all you got to do is steal one game. That's the thing. Yeah, the Heat have done this in all three series now. They stole game one in Milwaukee. They stole game one in New York, and they just stole game one in Boston. So now they have home court. So you go that whole season. Now they tried to address it a little with the play-in by not just gifting the 7 and 8 seeds a playoff series, but saying, okay, 7 and 8, but you're still going to have to beat out the 9 and 10 teams now to just get into the playoffs. And again, it dropped the Heat seed. When they lost the 7-8 game to Atlanta, they dropped to 8, and they ended up having to face Milwaukee in the first round, or they would have seen Boston in the first round. And who knows how that would have gone either way. But there's just not enough of an incentive to really push guys like Jimmy in the regular season to play 75 games or 80 games. There's just not anymore. I even go back to the Big Three era, and people would complain about Wade not playing enough, and Dwayne played more games in every season than Jimmy has the past three. It's just that we look at it differently at this stage. But once he gets to the postseason, once he locks in on another opponent, I mean, he is playing. It's kind of like when you just master your craft. Like, Jimmy is not the most athletic. He's a plus athlete for an NBA player, but he's not the most athletic. He's not the biggest. He's not the strongest, even though he seems to have like 2% body fat. Okay. And he's banged up by injuries through the years. Tibbs used to play him a ton of minutes. There's nothing about him that screams like, he's just a freak athlete, or he's like Curry, who's a reinvented.
He doesn't have superstar qualities. And Curry's superstar quality is his style that is so unique. And of course, shooting is a superstar.
Exactly.
You're right.
And Jimmy's not a great shooter. Like, but what he has is his will is off the charts in these situations, his IQ. And he's mastered the game to the point that he's playing at a different pace than everybody else. Like, you put the ball in Jimmy's hands in the last 5 minutes, you know he's going to slow it down. He's going to find the mismatch. It's just like tic-tac-toe. It's like, okay, they're going to send the double. Okay, now I'm going to clear it up. And they really don't have an answer. Nobody has had an answer for it. He's seen like 12 different defenders in the postseason. He's torn all them up and then taunted them as he's done it. And they can't do anything about it. And it goes back to the story in Minnesota when he forced his way out of Minnesota. Jeff Teague tells this story the best. He just told it recently. But where Jimmy was basically holding out but showed up one day at the facility and said – and Tibbs tried to put him on the first team. And he said, no, I'm taking those guys. And he pointed at the worst guys out there who had no chance to make the team. They were all G League guys. I'm playing with them. And he went on and embarrassed the Milwaukee.
It's like Minnesota. Something Jordan would do. It's like something Jordan would do.
Well, he is. Look, there's no MJ. There's no Kobe. Right. But if you're talking about personality type.
Yeah.
He's the closest thing in the modern NBA to that. He's not Jordan level. He's putting up Jordan numbers now. He's not Kobe level in terms of just sheer talent. OK, but.
But 31.5 points a game in the playoffs.
It's insane.
That's Jordan. Like that's
oh, it is. Oh, no, it is.
When it mattered most.
It is. And he hasn't had a bad game yet. That's the thing. And he's also playing right now with an ankle that looks like this, you know, in terms of its swelling and everything. But that hasn't mattered either. So, I mean, he's the guy that nobody wanted to see in the playoffs. And that was the thing. He just got there. They have the best coach. And right now they've got the guy who's playing Jokic, I guess, on the other side would be the other counter on this. But Jimmy Butler's been a top three player in the postseason so far overall, and that can carry you a long way.
Well, talking about this series, you got the Boston Celtics. They're up 1-0, obviously. Talk to me about how you see this series playing out. Of course, Jason Tatum, best player in Boston. You know, how do you see it? How did you see the game last night, and how do you see the rest of the series playing out?
Well, I thought it'd be a 7-game series. I still believe that's the case. These teams know each other so well. They're a little different from the teams that faced each other in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Boston's bench is different. Miami doesn't have Hero. I don't believe they will during this series. They don't have PJ Tucker from last year. The Oladipo got hurt, so they're playing more minutes to Caleb Martin. Lowry's healthier than he was last year. So the teams are a little different, but the core guys, Bam, Jimmy, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, the same. And the coaching matchup, to me, is the huge advantage for Miami. I thought it'd be a 7-game series. I still believe that's the case. Miami had an outlier quarter yesterday where they scored 46 in the third. Celtics outscored them in the other three quarters. This is a big joke because the national media likes to make excuses for the Celtics and Lakers under any circumstances. So the storyline 3 years ago when the Heat beat them in the bubble was that the Celtics won more quarters, which is like an old CBA thing, which is kind of ridiculous. So I was joking about that last night because I was like, I bet you they're going to say that. And then literally Joe Mazzulla after the game, the new coach of the Celtics, said, we won 3-1. And to me, it's such a loser mindset that I don't even know where you go with that. But
sometimes people think that that they won something or that they very obviously lost. I mean, that happens all the time in America. What do you mean the numbers were in that other person's favor? We won. You know, we won something else.
A lot of that happened on January 6th. But yes, in Boston, a bunch of folks were involved in that. But I'll just say, it's kind of a weird way to look at it, but Miami won the game last night because they put the ball in their best player's hands in the fourth quarter to close it, and Boston did not. Tatum, for some reason, was not initiating the offense in the fourth. He was scoreless in the fourth quarter. And I'll say this, and again, this is the difference. Like, people are like, okay, Tatum or Butler, 95% of NBA fans would take Jason Tatum. He was fourth in the NBA in MVP voting this year. He was first among Americans, by the way. We had this weird thing where, I guess it's where the game has gone, but the top three vote getters were Embiid, Jokic, and Giannis, all of whom were born in other countries. Tatum was the number one American player.
We don't even have basketball anymore, Ethan. We don't even have basketball anymore.
We lost everything. We lost it all. I guess that's where the American exceptionalism should have come in. But man. But the thing is, when it matters. So Tatum has this incredible, you know, stretch to close that game six against Philadelphia, but there are other times he disappears. With Jimmy now, you kind of know what you're getting. I would like to know what I'm getting. And yesterday, Tatum was not good enough in the fourth. So I would
expect... he has a history. Tatum doesn't have as much history as Butler. Playoff history, clutch history. That mindset, that Jordan, Kobe, Butler, but lesser athlete mindset is you can try to have it.
Right.
Right. I don't know if you can just sort of force yourself to.
Let me flip this on you, because I've always said this. There's a certain alpha type personality that's needed for those kind of situations. It's the I don't give a bleep. Right. Like, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to keep shooting. I mean, Kobe's clutch numbers over the course of his career were not that good. Like, his percentages were not that good, but everybody only remembers the ones he made because he kept taking them until he made them, right? Like, it's not the most efficient, but it is a
certain mindset. In basic human sense, it's when you have enough money to basically, it's like, I don't need to do anything anymore. And at that point, you can really take this F it to everybody and every single thing mindset. I'm just going to do what I want to do. But it's this freedom that occurs that then allows your mind to think about other things and actually like grow in other things. But Jimmy Butler has that. And then, of course, a lot of NBA players have enough money, or NFL players have enough money to retire. But he has that from like a reputation standpoint. Everyone still has this, like, there's an ego thing, and like, I'm trying to have a great career and do this. But he has it from just doesn't care about anything but winning.
Like, but look at his story, Sage, and it explains it. Okay, so he grows up in Tomball, Texas. Right, which is, I think, was per capita is the poorest town in Texas. Okay.
Yeah.
He grows up in Tomball. He's basically abandoned by his two parents. Okay. Both of them. So he bounces around from house to house. Okay. It's kind of like LeBron's story, except LeBron's mother was still involved in his life, even when LeBron was sort of raised by a coach for a period of time. He's bouncing around from house to house from age 13 on. He goes to junior college. He's not recruited. He goes to junior college. He transfers to Marquette. He doesn't start at Marquette his first year. He's drafted, but the last pick of the first round, okay, by Chicago. I mean, literally, the Heat had a crack at him. They took my friend Norris Cole then. You can argue if they took Jimmy Butler there, the Big Three dynasty might still be going. But anyway, he drafted 30th. He doesn't start a game as a rookie for Chicago. Tibbs played him 44 games, didn't start him once. He was basically Derrick Rose's caddy. And then now all of a sudden, he's literally averaging 31 in the playoffs. And he's making $48 million a year on his new contract. I mean, if you're him, you wouldn't give a bleep either. Like,
yeah, everything is gravy. Everything is gravy.
Exactly.
Like, at that point.
Yeah.
And that freedom, you know, for him, almost like takes your mindset to another level, which is why he doesn't really care about the regular season. As long as we get in the playoffs, now this is right. He has broken it down for him for what he is looking for: championships. At this point, I just want championships.
Right.
I doesn't care about this. Doesn't care. Just wants championships. And It's interesting to watch. He's such a great story. Maybe you'll get to write his book, you know, covering him these years.
I got to get him to sit for 3 minutes. I've covered him all, Sage, and he is different, man. Like, I mean, the thing about covering the Heat all these years is everybody comes through, right? You had Shaq, you had Dwayne, you had Bosh, Ray Allen, Gary Payton. I mean, everybody comes through, okay? Obviously – in Braun, okay, and Jimmy is just—he's a different entity to himself. Like, again, this is an organization that dealt with Shaq's folks, who dealt with all the people around LeBron. They know how to do that kind of stuff. It's Harvey Green, obviously. Harvey worked
with, of course.
Harvey would joke with me about it. He doesn't know how to do it because he's like, and I'm like, yeah, because Harvey, you would have been standing all over every time LeBron said a word, you would have been like, no, okay, that's it, we're done.
Harvey Green was our public relations director with the Miami Dolphins, and yeah, definitely a piece of work. Definitely was high strung, which I think you want your public relations director to be more even keeled, you know, but everyone was worried about what you writers were going to, Wanstead was obsessed with, like, don't read the articles. And then he was like the first one reading every single word about everything, looking for someone who may have leaked something. Yes. I mean, it was constantly, you writers, troublemakers. Well,
it's all our fault, right?
Let's switch topics. LeBron. All right. Yes. So on the other side, LeBron James, which you covered extensively during his run with the Heat. Mm-hmm. Talking about him, I don't know, is this his 20th year, 19th year?
20th I have no year.
Idea. 20th year. Talking about his career, him, Jordan, him, Steph Curry, you know, just his era, and where you see the big picture of LeBron, and then we'll get into this playoff series.
Well, I think there are different debates here when it comes to LeBron. And I covered 2010 and 2014, and then I covered 1 year of his in Cleveland for Bleacher Report when he went back. And there's one conversation to be had is, okay, who's the best player of all time? And I still think it is and is always going to be the guy who played in Chicago. I think to win – basically every time that he was trying to win a title towards the end of his career, he did. He got there six times. He beat five different teams, all of whom had Hall of Fame type players on them.
Okay, Took two years off.
I mean, but even if you look, look at the teams they beat in the finals. He beat a team with Barkley in his prime. He beat a team with Malone and Stockton in their prime twice. He beat a team with Gary Payton and Sean Kemp in their primes, with Payton being a Hall of Famer also. And he beat a team with Magic towards the end, okay? But it was still a Laker team, okay, that he beat. 6-0, every huge moment he came through. We can talk about the early career stuff and having to get past the Pistons. But once he established himself, I don't think there's any question he's the best of all time. But LeBron is going to have ultimately the most unique career of all time. And he's going to do things that Michael didn't do. I mean, Michael didn't play this long, right? Even after he came back from the hiatus, you know, when he came back and he played with Washington that time around, I mean, he was not this, okay?
He didn't have the triple doubles.
No, well, none of that stuff. But with Bron, I mean, literally, I mean, you're talking about a guy who is co-carrying, you know, because you don't know if AD is going to play from one day to the next. Like, he's co-carrying, you know, a team now, you know, again, at close to age 40 in his 20th season when he's played this kind of minute load. I mean, I used to write about this. This is almost 10 years ago now when he was with the Heat. He was playing entire additional seasons just through the playoffs, right? So like, that's the thing.
Yeah,
like,
his 21 seasons at this point is – or 20 seasons is a full 21, maybe 22 seasons. More than that.
Because if you look at it, I mean, you're talking about high intensity games here, you know, 25.
Oh, yeah.
High pressure, high intensity, you know, you got a few more. So
yeah, it's probably almost 25 seasons as far as number of games when you add all those up, something like that, maybe more.
Exactly. So it's just like, it's a remarkable thing that he's done. If you look at it from that perspective. And also the other thing is the level of pressure that he's played in during this era is not comparable to Jordan's. Remember, Jordan was playing in a no social media time. Like, this is a different deal. Like, LeBron, ESPN has basically built its entire programming around him for the past 20 years. Like, that is what it, I mean, everything is in relation to him. He's had to deal with that kind of pressure. And again, to still be playing at this kind of level is kind of insane, because I mean, it depends how long I sat down with him in Cleveland for his 30th birthday. I did like a 20-minute sit down with him after practice. I said, how long do you want to play? I said, you want to play till 40? He says, I don't know. He says, I want to play with my son. He told me that then. Okay. Well, now his son is a year away. Okay. Cause he's going to USC. He's actually playing for a friend of mine from high school. Andy Enfield is the coach at USC now. He played at Johns Hopkins way back when. And so his son's playing there, and then we'll see where he gets drafted to and how much pressure is put on a team to draft him, just so that maybe LeBron might go there to play with his son. But I think he could play at a pretty decent level for the next 3-4 years, something along those lines, if he wants to. But I don't know if LeBron is going to want to be a 14-point-a-game guy, you know, six-man coming off the bench. I don't know if he'll play for that. You know, Magic did it. But again, Magic had the HIV diagnosis and came back, and then kind of came back as a different player. I don't know if LeBron, from an ego standpoint, could handle that in that way. And I also don't think he wants to go through the kind of decline that we saw Kobe go through his last, you know, couple of years.
But LeBron's body is different.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan had a certain type of body. Kobe had a certain type of body. LeBron's is different. He's thicker, and Kobe and Jordan, their knees started breaking down. Their ankles mm-hmm. started breaking down. Mm-hmm. And LeBron's hasn't nearly as much. I think it's just because he's just so, like, put together.
Yeah.
And, you know, and of course, his height and his physicality, he's truly a different level of athlete. Like, that is his thing. He's just –
yeah.
He's one in a billion. He's the only one, really, in the world.
It's a combination of genetics and work. It's both. It's not one or the other.
Of course.
Because I watch.
No matter what Kobe did in the weight room, he wasn't going to have LeBron's body.
No. But also, if LeBron, see, what LeBron did so well, the other thing that's so underrated about everything is the people he's really bad at putting players on his team. Like when he wants to play GM, it never works. He's really good at his team, if you know what I mean. Like he empowered people around him who nobody else probably would have hired in that situation. Like he turned down the big name agents, okay, and he went with Maverick Carter, his high school friend, to run basically his marketing. He went with Randy Mims to basically handle his day-to-day. He hired Rich Paul, who was basically a fan of his. He wasn't even a close high school friend or anything like that, to be his agent. And he has Mike Mancias, who I'm friendly with and I'm a big fan of his, who is just a super trainer and a really nice guy, and just is a relentless worker with LeBron. And I would just watch the programs they put together, and he's new age thinking and all that stuff. He does not call attention to himself. If you look around the people around LeBron, Maverick a little bit, most of them, he's very good about keeping them kind of in line, where it's, you know, it's about, it's LeBron Inc. basically. Okay. And they know they're a part of it. And he's just picked all the right people for that. And I don't think he's gotten enough credit for that. And that's why he's a billion-dollar athlete now. I mean, he's literally a billion-dollar athlete. He hasn't made the best movie choices, I will say that. Space Jam, kind of a disaster, that house party thing. But, like, as far as his basketball part of it, like, and getting him in the right condition, right mind frame. And I don't think the other thing with LeBron that's so completely underrated is just, again, the IQ. I used to stand in front of him, and he would remember – I'd ask him a question, and he'd have recall of like a play from like 2 years earlier in like a third quarter game against Detroit on a Tuesday night. Like, and it's like, he's like, yeah, this is like when I did this against that. And then you would look back and it would actually have occurred. Like just photographic memory on that kind of stuff, ability to recall, understand every situation. He would do this thing with us on the road. We'd be in a shoot around like in Sacramento when like the team was bad with the Kings, which they were for years. And he said to me, they would ask him about, and he would know like the guys on the G League team for the Kings. And I'm like, how does he have time for this? Like, how does he, you know, like most of us, like literally he's running an enterprise. He's got a family. Okay. How does he know like who the third string point guard is for like, you know, for like the Canton Crush or whatever? Like, it's just, it's unbelievable, honestly.
Where do you see his career going after he's done? After he's done playing, let's talk about LeBron James between 5-10 years out. Is he in the media? Is he business? Is he the head coach for his son's team in the NBA? where is he, you think, 5 or 10 minutes after retiring from basketball?
I think he's – that's a good question. He won't be a coach. I mean, maybe for his, yeah. I mean, because he won't be a coach at this level. It doesn't pay enough. He won't be in media, I don't think. I don't think he'll do that. I don't think he'll want to mix it up in that way. And I don't think there's enough value in it for him. He's not as entertaining as Charles or anything like that. So I don't think he would go that direction. I think it's mostly going to be business, but I also think he's the type, he craves attention. And so that's why I don't know if just being in the business world and producing TV shows and all the rest of this is going to be enough for him. Like, he likes being in the eye of the storm. He needs it. When he doesn't get it, it's like he cries out for it and on social media. And so I'm not exactly sure. I don't think he's going to get into politics. I had conversations with him a long time. I know where he stands on stuff, but I don't think he would do that. I think.
Well, then he no longer, if he gets in politics and he's done with playing basketball, that he doesn't have to just dribble anymore. He can do other things.
Well, that's a good point. And we just saw that some of the people who told him to shut up and dribble have lost their jobs recently, which I took great pleasure in that. I think he's going to have to be somewhere where he feels like he's still getting a certain level of attention. So I don't know if business is going to be enough, but I don't know exactly what it's going to be. I mean, I think ownership is another place he could go. Michael went that direction. I could see him.
Could you see Pat Riley sort of turn it over to LeBron?
No. No, I don't think Mickey was. Things have patched up a little bit in Miami, but not.
Do you think at that point, like, it's where LeBron like wants to live? Where you want to live is important when you're done. You've had to live in different places, chosen to live in different places, but there is this place where you plant your roots. and dive into that community. And that will, I would assume, you know, have a long way in what he wants to do, you know, forever.
I think so. And a lot of it is where his Savannah wants to live too, because that'll play into it also. And I think they've found a home in Los Angeles. I never felt they really felt at home in Miami. I guess they could go back to Ohio also. I mean, he could pretty much live anywhere. The kid's going to be out of the house soon. He's got the second one who's almost there too. So that changed the equation, but he's got the young daughter actually. So maybe it'll be a little bit longer. It's funny, his daughter was born 3 days after mine. So we used to trade baby pictures when we went up to Cleveland. It's hard to believe it's that long ago. But yeah, I just think that he's going to need someplace where he feels like he's the center of attention. I think ownership is a place because, you know, LeBron became very big on Black empowerment as his career has gone on. And a lot of that is who he's empowered around him. And I feel like he wants to be in a role where he has influence in that way. And becoming an NBA owner, I think, is, you know, a primary owner, kind of like Michael has, but having more success than Michael has.
Yes.
Would be good, because Michael's been kind of a disaster in Charlotte. I mean, you look at the picks and you look at the lack of playoff success. I mean, they're a non-factor with Michael Jordan as their owner. I don't think that's what he wants. I think LeBron will be more in tune to try to follow the path of Magic, who has been extraordinarily successful with, you know, the movie theaters and everything else that Magic has done in Los Angeles. And so I could see LeBron doing a lot more in that space, you know, high profile business stuff where he makes money. But I don't think money is what drives LeBron. It's part of it, but it's mostly influence at this stage. It's influence and attention.
I will say there's an aspect of once you become ownership, NBA ownership, NFL ownership, there is this fraternity.
Yes.
There is this club that a lot of people would like to get into one way or another. And everyone has different amounts of money. And the Cowboys just got bought by one of the Waltons. And so you are now in a bigger world. So for business deals, for this, that, and the other, it's a simple, very, very, they would take the phone call anyway, but it just becomes this different level. And there is power to create influence within the NBA, in his words, and, you know, at the owners meetings and the way he votes and the way, and, you know, who ends up being the commissioner of the league and those things like that. I mean, there is big influence that does trickle down to, you know, the rest of the country, really the rest of the world, because the NBA definitely is a world game, way more than the NFL. I mean, it seems like to me he wants to do something big. He doesn't want to just go away. And, you know, I have old teammates who they made their money and they, you know, they literally just, they go fishing all the time.
Right.
They go fishing. They take trips out to Wyoming to go fly fishing. They disappear and they're happy to, but LeBron is not. I agree with you. He needs that attention. It's not a, and I don't even think it's his ego. I think that he knows how impactful he can be. And I think that's great. I think that he should use his voice and his power, for the, you know, for the betterment of everybody. And I think LeBron would be a great ambassador in that sort of role.
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit of both. And you mentioned, like, you know, you look at the greats of the NFL from the past, you know, 10, 20 years. You know, Peyton has stayed in a public space, right? You know,
but a media role.
You know, Brady, we'll see if he ever actually calls any games, because I'm dubious on that. I feel like that's going to fall apart before it. I mean, it's already been pushed back a year, and I get the sense that other things are going to be attractive to him. Of course, you know, Favre got involved in some things that probably LeBron wouldn't want to get involved in. But you know,
the Akron Zips need a new football stadium, and therefore, the people of Ohio and the country should help support Akron Zips new football stadium. Is that you're talking about?
Precisely, some kind of boondoggle like that. Yes. That might be a possibility. But I just think, you know, again, NFL and NBA is different too, because in the NBA, like you mentioned, it's international, but also the money was all guaranteed. You know, it's only recently that the NFL is coming around to that with some of the quarterbacks, as you know, that are actually going to make that kind of guaranteed money. But otherwise, it's, you know, it's basically a year-to-year proposition in the NFL. It's not in the NBA. you're making generational wealth in the NBA if you're at that level. You know, you're not necessarily in the NFL. So you see more of the NFL guys get back into the space. But, you know, the NBA, too, is just like, you know, sometimes there have been guys who have gotten into media that I thought there were no chance they were going to get into media because the money wasn't going to be good enough and everything. But they just like giving their opinions. And that's, you know, that's kind of the thing. And the NBA is it is kind of a big social club, essentially. It's, you know, it's when I go to NBA All-Star games, it's all the same guys who come back every year. It's all that. You go to the Hall of Fame announcements. It's the same guys that come back every year. It's a lot of it is, you know, there are fewer players on each team. There are fewer stars, but the stars, you see their faces. You know, you don't see their faces in the NFL as much. And there's no helmets. There's no and also in the NBA, I've always felt this, that the players are empowered to speak their minds. In the NFL, they're not, as you know. It's more about team. Don't step out of line.
We are. We have no faces behind those face masks. It's just a number.
Right.
And did he do my team right? That's all that matters. Come on, 72. Come on, 72. He doesn't have a name or a face.
I mean, whereas in the NBA, literally, Jimmy Butler in the locker room the other day, they wanted him to do podium, and he didn't really want to do it. So he says, fine, I'll effing do it, but I'm not putting a shirt on. And they're like, fine. So he literally comes out just shirtless to the podium. You know, NFL would not be tolerated.
No.
I would not.
That'd be a large fine. They fine you for like everything in the NFL. They're just like everything that we can possibly think of. We're going to try. We'll find a way to find you for that. If you're a pound overweight, it was like, hey, we're going to designate a weight for you. It's like, why do you get to designate the weight for me? I understand my body is, I think, pretty dang well. Well, and if you're a pound over that weight, $476 per pound per day. It's like, what is going on here? I'm only making $300,000. I'm a, you know, first or second year player. The NFL's rules for everything. Definitely the NBA is a little bit more free. Well, we can't stay forever. I got to get let you free to go. I sincerely appreciate your time. I don't know if I'm going to, do you want to throw in one Dolphins memory from our time together, Nick Saban or the Ricky story?
I'll tell one Saban story. I mean, I've got plenty of stories obviously from over those years, but the one Saban story, when did I ever tell you about when he MF'd me at a bar?
No, go continue.
Okay. So this was 2006. Okay. So not his first year, but his second year.
2007. That's right. Yeah. 2006. That's right.
So 2005 was his first year, and the team made a little run at the end of the season, you know, to I think back to 9-7.
Wait, that's right. Earlier in the podcast, I said 2006-7. Anyway, I was in Miami. That was the Texans. I was in Miami 2002, 2003, 2004, and 2005. Saban's first year.
Yes.
So this is now Saban's second year. So this is about the time where he's probably already realized he made a mistake. With going after Drew Brees and the Dante Culpepper, it's right around this time, right?
Well, it actually was the same day as something significant happened. So basically, I mentioned Harvey Green. He had asked me to. Saban used to do his weekly radio show, where he had like three regular callers. He used to do it at Gatsby's in Davie, which was like an upscale pool bar. It's not a pool hall. It's not there anymore.
Oh, love Gatsby's.
I liked it too. I was kind of disappointed it disappeared. So he would do his show from there, and he would have a media guest who would ask him some of the questions. He'd have an in-house people. His wife was always there, and there were some regulars that would come. And then the phone guests. It aired on 790 The Ticket, which also no longer exists. So basically, Harvey Green had been trying to get me to appear. He needed media guests, and nobody – Saban hated us, so nobody really wanted to do it. It's not like we got paid for it. They would give
Saban,
us 20.
Saban hated the media.
He despised us. Okay.
How many games has the media won us? How many playoff games has the media won us?
But we lost all of them for you guys. So basically, I mean, he literally painted over our parking spots. That was his first thing he did when he got there. So he didn't like any of us. So we didn't really like him. So I didn't want to. I mean, I respected him, but I didn't really want to deal with him. So, and you would get like a $25 gift card from Gatsby's. That was the perk. So I was like, Harvey kept trying to push me to come on because I hadn't come on the whole year. And he rotated others on there, Marvez and others. And I'm like, okay, fine, I'll do it. Okay, I'll do it. Just this one time, whatever. But the season had basically played itself out. Okay, they weren't going to the playoffs. Okay, I do think he realized he made a mistake. And by the way, on the very day that I had already agreed to do it, but on the day that I was supposed to go do it, was the day that Dave Hyde, who was a fellow columnist of the Sun Sentinel, asked Saban at the press conference, are you going to be the Alabama coach? because all that stuff was swirling because it was towards the end of the season. And that's the day that Nick gave his BS answer, okay, you know, about not, no, I ain't going to be the Alabama coach, okay, whatever. So literally, I'm on the way down to Gatsby's, and Harvey Green calls me, and he says, listen, Ethan, yeah, I really appreciate you doing this, but, you know, don't ask Nick anything about Alabama. He's like, don't, you know, I don't, he's like, you know what happened today? Because I was in the room, okay, I was in the press conference room. Don't ask anything. I'm like, okay.
Your impersonation, by the way, it was more of like, this is how Harvey Green talked. Hey, Sage, hey, Sage, how's it going? How's your dad, Bob?
Right. As opposed to what's that? Know what I mean? So I basically, I said, okay, fine. I said, no problem. So I go down there and I'm sitting with Nick, and it was a very light crowd. His wife was there. It was a very light crowd because the team was not making the playoffs. It was like three games left or whatever. So they're going around. So they were having trouble getting questions. So I had to ask a lot of the questions. And plus, nobody was calling in. So Nick was getting irritated already because it was like nobody's paying attention to him. And he obviously was not thinking about this stupid radio show because he'd got an offer from Alabama. So he didn't want to tell anybody about. So he wasn't – okay. So finally he comes around to me. And I'm like, on the fourth question, I asked the most innocuous question that I could ask, which was the Pro Bowl voting had come out that week. So I said, any thoughts, coach, on, you know, trying to be respectful. I said, any coach thoughts on, you know, Jason and Zach, you know, making the Pro Bowl. And, you know, did you think anybody else was deserving? You know, because it was always Jason and Zach. So I said, do you think anybody else was deserving? And he goes through, he gives this long answer. He goes, and he names everybody on the effing roster. Okay, everybody. He goes through the whole thing. So then it's a break because it's like a radio break. So he's walking around. He gets to go say hello to his wife. And Harvey turns to me and he goes, Ethan, I want to thank you for asking, you know, respectful questions tonight, not going there. And Nick spins around. He goes, that's not an MF in good question. He said, now I got to name every MFer on the MF in disappointing, underachieving MF in team that I have. He's like, because otherwise some MF is going to be pissed at me in the MF in morning. He's like, so he looks at me, he goes, do your job. I'm like, dude, I'm here for a $25 gift card. Okay. I got other things that I could do. And there was a poker game that was supposed to be at my apartment that night. Okay. With a bunch of media guys, some people you probably know, Seth Levitt, Jason Jackson, George Sedano. I'm here at this place. Okay. Dealing with this. He doesn't apologize, doesn't do anything. So I sit there. He's MFing me in front of everybody for asking a softball question. So that day I got home and I messaged the late Brian Wiedmeyer. And I said, I just want to tell you one thing, because I was friendly with Brian. Brian passed. He was the president of the Dolphins at the time. I'm never going to be in a room with that person again. I said, I'm not dealing with it. I'm just letting you know. So for 3 days, the PR staff tried to get me to come up and talk to Nick in his office. Nick wants to talk to you. Coach wants to talk. I'm like, I'm fine. I'm working down here. So finally, third day, I go up there. I walk into his office. He looks at me. He's eating a tuna fish sandwich. He looks at me when I walk in. He goes, Ethan, do we have a problem? And I'm like, Coach, I said, you MF'd me in the middle of a bar. He's like, I was just in a bad mood. My wife says I sometimes say the wrong thing to people. I think the wrong thing. This isn't like a misunderstanding, okay? You just questioned my entire personal credibility because I asked you who should be in the Pro Bowl. That's basically it. But here's the crazy thing about it. He was so manipulative that I actually thought that he was staying, because my thing was, why would he care about my feelings as the number two columnist of the Sun Sentinel if he was leaving town for Alabama? So he totally threw me off course, because I was like, no, he's staying with the Dolphins. Why would he care about me if he's going to Alabama? Literally 3 days later, he was off for Alabama. So there you go.
That's quite the Nick Saban story. I have a few of my stories, but I'm not going to share them today. You don't have much time. You have a playoff run to cover. Should see tonight is Thursday we're recording this, right? Yeah. So tonight is Jokic and those Nuggets. It'd be really cool to see the Denver Nuggets win the whole thing. You know, there's something about that, those certain cities that have, you know, need to win a championship, and Denver could use a championship.
And they've never won one. They won in the ABA, but they've never won since they've gone to the NBA. I don't know if the NBA would consider it really cool for the Denver Nuggets to win a championship, but we'll see. It feels like they want Lakers Celtics at all costs, but you know, we'll see what the officiating is in game 6 and 7, because we know there's a little bit of manipulation that could be.
Yeah, done. It's all they love those big markets. Well, yes. I appreciate your time. Good to see you. Good chatting with you. I appreciate the sort of the NBA news and the inside detail on the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler. You know, what a character that guy is, but clutch. And I think he's creating his own legacy, partly with his I don't give a crap attitude. It's given the confidence, his team confidence to it seems like, to win and to play great when it matters most.
And you came out to a lot of those press conferences shirtless and saying, I don't give a bleep too.
Yeah, I didn't come out to any press conferences because no one cared about what I said. And based off of like Wanstead's paranoia and Saban's paranoia, like I tried to talk to media people as little as possible.
That's true.
And you and I had a drink one time and when I was there, and I lightly treaded on giving you a little bit of background, a little inside information. At one point, I recall at the Hard Rock Casino, I think, for like a Jason Taylor charity event. So
that's correct.
You know, it was those are quite the years, intense years for the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Very intense, like press years. Maybe that's what molded and forged all the media people down there to then go and have success all over the place. They were forged by the paranoia of Nick Saban and Dave Wanstead and Jimmy Johnson.
A few cents. We finally have, God, you would like playing for the guy we have now, though.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Well, I did play for him. He was a Kyle Shanahan prodigy.
Oh, that's right.
Houston. Him, LaFleur, Robert Saleh. It's that little run there
I'm a big McDaniel fan. I think that I like his approach.
I left Miami because I wanted to live longer, and I did 1 year Nick Saban, and I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm taking plus it was like I need to get paid. I've never really made a big paycheck, and so I went off to Houston to the worst team in the NFL. but we got it flipped around pretty quickly. Kubiak put together quite a staff. So now anyway, Ethan, thanks for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Good luck to you, and go Miami Heat.
We'll see. We'll see how far this run drags me. Have a good one, Sage.
Thanks for coming on.
Iowa everywhere.